weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, thanks to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, July 1st, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Collier will keep us up to date with the latest Euro 2024 Last 16 action, as France and Belgium have just kicked off in the second half, and it remains goalless.
We'll also look back at all the weekend matches in the Euros. In cycling, Shane Stokes reflects on the opening days of the Tour de France, while Kieran Whelan and Peter Canavan with us to review the All-Ireland football quarterfinals as Armagh, Galway, Donegal and Kerry book their places in the last four.
As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp the show on 087 187 9200, or you can find us on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
I was trying to sound upbeat about France, Belgium, Alan and Ruby, but it's been a bit of a dour first half, I must admit. More bookings than goals, unfortunately. A couple of chances. Mike Maignan made a save with his legs, and France had, Marcus Thuram had half a chance with a header as well, but not much to report in that. Unfortunately, Alan, unfortunately.
Yeah, even Shane, even Ruby, bit of a damp squib, all right, and it's disappointing, I suppose, when you get two powerhouses like this going at it. You want to see them go at it, but that hasn't been the case at all, Shane. And we are into the knockouts.
The Belgian fans, as good as told you the last day, they're not a powerhouse anymore. They booed the players off the pitch of getting through.
Yeah. And I'd agree with them as well, Ruby, for what they've been serving up. They've been disappointing, Belgium, and even in this game as well, their approach, they've been very negative. They're obviously just trying to sit in and soak up as much pressure as possible, and they've two pacey fellas up front, obviously Lukaku and Openda, and trying to hit them on the counter attack. But there was a couple of spells in the first half where Belgium did have a couple of dangerous attacks, but their final ball let them down. But France themselves, for the ball they've had, they haven't really created anything, and Mbappe in particular has been very, very quiet.
Well, certainly has, with his mask, with his new look.
To be fair, well, like when we're like, I do have the chats and conversations with me mates all week, all day. Every match throws up something different, a different conversation. But when you're discussing who we think is going to win it and who the teams you think are potential outright winners, there's no real standout team.
Yeah,
probably
no.
Spain at the moment, I would say, are ahead of the others. But even at that, I still think they're very beatable on their day. And obviously they're playing Germany now, and we'll get into the bigger chat later. But I don't think there's any real standout team. I think they're all much of a muchness at the moment.
France, after having a standout chance, Tchouaméni has curled one into the bottom corner, but it'd be really well saved. Took a bit of a deflection off out face, I think, and Castells in the Belgium goal got down well to the left hand side. It's been a bit of entertainment over the weekend as well. Which, gentlemen, it's a Monday. I've just dived into the Euros because it's on the telly in front of me. But weekend sporting, Ruby, we were chatting off here. Alan Colley apparently has a humdinger of a weekend sporting highlight that
he wouldn't even
reveal off air.
No, I was saving it. I was saving it for live on air, and it is an absolute humdinger, and it deserves all the credit. We could actually spend 10 minutes on this. Taylor Swift, Shania Twain, Longitude, the Euros, Ruby was at the Derby, there was Gaelic matches in Croke Park, but the sporting highlight of the weekend was the minor hurling All-Ireland final. It was absolutely unbelievable. Probably one of the best matches I've seen. Now, I'm a fan of the hurling. The Gaelic is getting a lot of criticism at the moment, so I'm in the hurling camp, but these young lads played out an absolute cracker. Tipperary went down to 13 men as well, fought their way back, went to extra time, won it in extra time with an absolute cracker.
In Kilkenny, with a cracker of a
goal as well. And then to top it all off, just when I thought this can't get any better, their manager was interviewed. James Woodlock gave one of the best interviews I've heard all year. And a lot of people, even from my days of playing, everybody saying a team generally reflects your manager. Well, all the heart, resilience, passion, drive, determination, all those words that you want to throw into the mix, he actually showed every one of them in the interview as well, and I thought it was brilliant.
What did I read? Someone tweeted during the week, or a quote somewhere, that 13 Tipperary men have made the whole country shout for Tipperary. That's an achievement in itself.
Good drumming inch, man.
Ruby, it was fantastic. It really was. And particularly, like, I know the hurling, and obviously there's debates around the football, and you'll chat about that later on, because it was a bit of another damp squib yesterday in Croke Park. Really, really dour stuff. But the hurling is carrying the GAA at the moment, I feel. But for these young lads to serve up what they did,
it was unbelievable.
It really was. And to go down to 14 after, I think it was only 7 minutes, which was really harsh on the lad, and then before half time went down to 13, and to portray all the skills that they did and the composure they showed even when it got to the end, I just thought it was a brilliant, brilliant sporting highlight.
Ruby, does your sporting highlight revolve around the derby, perhaps?
Derby was a great weekend. I did enjoy it. But no, I actually was flicking between racing and everything else that was on yesterday. And I thought the crowd at Morton Stadium. I thought the crowd that Irish Athletics drew back to Santry, the people that were there. And there's no doubt it was all to watch one lady. And she delivered, Radisha Adelecki, and broke an Irish record. But to watch, it must be, even watching Rob Derville and Sonia standing there working on it, even for them to see the health of athletics must make a lot of people in Irish athletics very proud to watch the crowds that the people are drawn, even obviously for Sonia watching Sophie O'Sullivan winning must have been great, but to have pride in your own sport, to watch the crowd that these people are bringing to Santry, I thought that was great to watch.
Isn't that brilliant, Ruby, the knock on effect that it will have, and a day like that where
And it wasn't great weather even, and they still, on the first day, to be fair, it wasn't great weather, but they still came out in their droves, which was...
Especially when you're competing with so much as well, and
such a busy weekend.
And the athletics does get lost a little bit, and that's probably down to the fact that we haven't had maybe a superstar for a few years, but as Ruby said, for them all to turn out for this unbelievable talent that we have now.
Do you think it was brilliant that Radisha was there, though? The national championships, I think it's a huge thing. Like we say it year in, year out about the best golfers coming back to play in the Irish Open. I think when you have a national championships, if your own best athletes aren't there, it kind of degrades it a little. And it was great that she was there.
Where was City of Troy?
we'll be getting to that.
Get there if you want, but he's running next Saturday. That's, I suppose, that is the problem with horse racing, with so many jurisdictions and so many people wanting a slice of the pie. That the pie gets sliced up too much, but he'll be in Sandown next weekend, and yesterday was down to Los Angeles.
Well, don't say we look after you. Don't look after you, Alan Colley. Our producer Andrew has pulled this out of the bag. The Tipperary minor hurling manager, James Woodley.
That was brilliant.
Isn't it fantastic? I think for us, the talk all the week, I suppose that the time cost is the wrong thing to do. You know, probably on my behalf, I was happy coming down here. I worked down here. We won an All Ireland down here 2 years ago. I was bringing the players down. Now you have to challenge them. That's my job as minor manager, challenge them. And they took every challenge this year on the chin, and they performed really well. Really difficult today to see two of your players, after putting in such an effort, leave the field to play with two straight red cards. I don't want to see that. Nobody wants to see that. I feel bitterly disappointed for them. But on the back of that, the other 13 boys rode in for them. To get the win was absolutely fantastic. It's not a graveyard down here anymore for Tipperary or anything like that, you know, so it's great. It was a battling performance. We just stuck at it, used the space as best we could. But look, hurling goes out the window and it goes to heart and desire, and the boys showed all of that.
Heart and desire.
And that's what it boils down to, Shane. Like, the amount of sports now are dictated by statistics and tactics and jargon and rubbish and so much of it boils down to your heart and passion and emotion, and those boys, honestly, listen to the manager here. I want to play a match for James Woodlock.
You wouldn't get on the panel, never mind us 15.
But I even, when you say all that, right, so stats, jargon, etc. To me, one of the sports that's way ahead of others when it comes to stats, and especially with athletes, is cycling, and how far advanced that is with knowing exactly where its cyclists are, what they're doing, everything. Yet we still listened to an interview with Sam Bennett last week, and he was still hoping, going to the Tour de France, that he was fit enough and that he was fresh enough. That it's still immeasurable. No matter how much you have, people still don't know. And that, I liked listening to that the other day. That, by the way, the world can't be measured in a number.
Well, speaking of Sam Bennett, before we hear from Shane Stokes, who's going to join our conversation.
Hang on, before you go there, you never give us your highlight.
Do you know what, Ruby? I was going to curse
you. Dodging it there, right?
No, I was going to curse you in the ad break, because I was going to say, do you know what? You're all going to think it's Shelburne winning 2-0, stereotypical, and then bang, it was like the crowd in Morton. The crowd in the north side of Dublin and Santry was brilliant. Then Ruby's after stealing that on me.
Ruby, you know what? He's actually a little bit blasé about Shelburne now. I remember this time last year, and the cynical Shane Dawson, he's saying, no, we won't win it. We're going to lose 1-0, and I don't fancy us. He's actually blasé about
it. No, it was a very good 90 minute performance, and it's brilliant to come back from the mid-season break with a win, with a clean sheet, and a perfect platform to head up to Drogheda on Thursday and then into Europe.
I'm going to Drogheda Thursday.
I tell you what else Alan Colley was right about. You're right about Mbappe being off. You want to see what he just missed here?
Oh, really?
Oh, You see, yeah. Alan was too fixated with winding me up over Shells. He's after missing the Euros. We will be chatting
and
football.
He's supposed to be watching that for us.
It's behind me. I can't. I don't have eyes in the back of the head, Ruby. I'm too involved in this conversation.
We are going to get into football in detail a little bit later on, look back on all of the weekend matches as well. We probably won't have time to cover League of Ireland in detail. So, Alan, I want to put something to you. Is it a two-horse race now?
Absolutely. Sligo Rovers, the Shamrock Rovers thing is done.
Done and dusted.
Yeah.
They've still got Europe.
I think they'll struggle in Europe. They're not playing well enough. There's too many problems going on there.
Who knows? Alan, I'll let you turn around and watch the match now. Thank you. We will be checking in with you shortly. Before we chat, cycling, just Wimbledon kicked off today. Carlos Alcaraz got his Wimbledon title defence off to an encouraging start with straight sets victory on centre court. The Spaniard, seeded third this year, beat Estonian qualifier Mark Lahal 7-6, 7-5, 6-2 in 2 hours and 22 minutes. While third seed on the women's side of the draw, Arina Sabalenka, has pulled out of Wimbledon hours before her first round match with Emina Bektas, a two-time Australian Open champion. Sabalenka revealed on Saturday there was a chance she could withdraw from the third major of 2024 due to an ongoing shoulder problem called Torres Major, which primarily affects her serve, I believe. Sabalenka was set to be second on court one, but cut short her practice this afternoon before All England club organisers confirmed she'd been forced to withdraw. The same fate has befallen Victoria Azarenka, who was scheduled to play Sloane Stephens on court two later, but she too has had to withdraw. In cycling news, Benaim Germay made history as the first black African to win a Tour de France stage as Mark Cavendish was held up by a late crash on the run into Turin. Shane Stokes, cycling journalist, joins us now. Shane, dramatic day three of the Tour de France. What has occurred?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the longest stage of the tour, so just a shade over 230 kilometres. And actually a stage of not much action, as you might expect from something so long and in such heat. So the riders eased back. There was just one breakaway rider clear for much of it. A bunch sprint was predicted and almost guaranteed, and that's indeed what happened. So Mark Cavendish was trying to go for his record, what would be an out-and-out record, 35th stage win. He currently shares 34 stage wins with Eddie Merckx, the legendary Eddie Merckx. And he was caught behind a late crash. He didn't go down the crash, but he was caught. And Sam Bennett looked good. He was in a good position, but the only thing was that his team lead out jumped too early, and Sam Bennett was left with 300 metres to go, far too early to sprint, eased back to try and get other riders ahead of him, and ended up being completely boxed in and finishing ninth. So frustrating for Sam, because he said he did have good legs in the finale. Felt a bit rougher, I think, early on, but then the finale felt very good. So frustration for him.
And well, we can hear from Sam Bennett now getting his reaction to stage three.
It wasn't the result that I wanted, and the boys were amazing, and of course Ollie did a fantastic job. You know, we were really in a great place, and the legs felt terrible today. It was just the heat the first few days, first time in the heat this season, and then a long day, so the legs were quite heavy. And the final, to be honest, I was freewheeling the last 200, 250 metres, waiting for it to open, and it never opened. I could never get out, so it's quite frustrating, because you do 240 kilometres and then you're freewheeling over the line, you don't get the sprint, you know. In one sense, it's good that I know it was definitely possible today. On the other hand, it's quite frustrating, because there's only seven chances left.
Only seven chances left, and only seven left for Mark Cavendish as well. But I suppose the other side of the coin is, Shane, at least he was there with his legs feeling heavy at the sprint.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think what he meant was that he felt bad early on, but in the finale there was nothing wrong with his legs at all, and that's often the case with a sprinter in form, that they can pick themselves up for the finale. And I think Sam will get better as the race goes on. He told me that last week, that he expects weeks two and three he'd be gaining ground on his rivals in terms of how fresh he is, because he's worked so hard on his base this year. He was actually on the stage winner's wheel, on Benaim Germay's wheel, with about 250 metres to go, so in the ideal position, but then got squeezed out by Arnaud Delis, the rider who finished third. So Sam basically had to back off, otherwise he would have crashed, and that's really the undoing of him. But yeah, he was looking good, and just with a sprint as chaotic as that, it really is luck as much as placings and as much as legs. And as you mentioned, there's seven chances left. Probably Wednesday and Thursday will be both opportunities. And I think he'll be encouraged by today. Frustrated, but encouraged.
Normal service was resumed on the tour yesterday when Tadej Pogacar took the yellow, but he lost it today. Richard Carapaz is the new yellow jersey leader. Probably won't hold it for long, but at least he has it.
Yeah, that's right. So Tadej Pogačar launched a huge move yesterday. You might remember that Jonas Vingegaard was involved in a really big crash in April and hasn't actually raced until the start of this tour, so there's question marks over his form. So Pogačar was predicted to try and gain early time on him. He tried that yesterday and Vingegaard was actually able to match him. I don't think Vingegaard was quite as strong yesterday, but Pogačar wasn't able to shake him off. And then Richard Carapaz and Remco Evenepoel were the other two riders. They got back up to them and finished in the same time. So he had four riders in the same time starting today. It came down to stage placings. I think Pogačar is happy enough to let go of the yellow jersey. They're all on the same time, so no ground really lost, but it means his team doesn't have to do any hard work. Tomorrow's stage, though, is a real test. It's the first real mountain stage. It goes to Valoir, but it crosses the Col de Glibier, the summit of that. It's over 2,600 metres, so you can imagine it's going to be hugely influential on the pattern of the race. And the summit of that is 20 kilometres from the end. So you can bet your house on Pogačar going on the attack and trying to shake off Vingegaard and the others as well. So, yeah, I think it's very unlikely Carapaz will be in yellow tomorrow.
Is it normal for the Tour to have a stage in the Alps this early?
No, it's not. It's not. And this year's Tour is quite atypical. It started in Italy, which it hasn't done before. And the trend in the last couple of tours is for things to get really tough really early. Normally the Alps are much later in the race. Sometimes the Pyrenees comes first, then the Alps, sometimes the Alps and the Pyrenees. But it's often weeks two and three before the big mountains happen. But in the last couple of years, the tour organisers have spiced things up. And I think the race is better for it, because I remember tours years ago where the first, say, five, six stages were all sprints and it did get quite repetitive. Whereas this way, if any of the big favourites opens a big lead early on, he's a long time defending it, and it makes it more possible for changes at the end of the race. So I think it's better for the race, all right.
Shane, just before we do let you go, we were chatting there with Sam Bennett and what hopefully the next few days holds for him. Ben Healy, what's the situation with Ben and what are his aspirations?
Yeah, so Ben is riding his first tour. It's only his second 3-week race. He did the Giro d'Italia last year in his debut pro season. He won a stage there and he's very much up for winning a stage. He was really aggressive on Saturday, actually rode very well, but there was two riders clear who stayed clear until the end with Romain Bardet winning, and Ben couldn't quite get across to them because those two were riding really well. And he was also aggressive yesterday, so he said he's going to go all out for a stage win, and the early signs are promising for his form. What was really interesting was I chatted to him before the start of the race. He said his biggest Achilles heel is the heat. So he was training at home in a utility cupboard with the Heatron Max, wearing painter's overalls to try and acclimatise to the heat. So, he said he felt pretty good at the weekend. So he kind of feels that the painter's overalls helped him in that. So, yeah, it's encouraging. And I think he will be prominent in the tour on the breakaway stages.
With a bit of luck, you will. Shane Soaks, thanks a million. Hopefully we'll be in touch again the next week or two with news of a Sam Bennett victory. But we've a break to take and we'll be back with Kieran Whelan and Peter Canavan to discuss all the football action.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Peter Canavan and Kieran Whelan join us to chat Gaelic football. Before we chat to the lads, Alan Colley still with us, keeping an eye on France-Belgium, nil all, 65 minutes on the clock. Any chances of note since we last checked in?
No, not much has changed, Shane. Still a bit of a cagey affair, but he's made a couple of changes now. Mbappe, he's brought off Thuram, he's brought on Kolo Muani, more attack and tread up top, but yeah, we're still crying out for that first goal.
Okay, well, you'll be keeping us up to date and hopefully we will crash out of our guard chat with a cracker to report on. But for now, Peter Canavan and Kieran Whelan are with us. Peter, if I come to you first, the big story of the weekend, of course, Galway Dublin. Before we start a post-mortem on Dublin GAA, and I know Kieran Whelan has been very vocal on that over the weekend, Peter, just how much credit do Galway deserve and what got them over the line ultimately?
They do, of course. They deserve a lot of credit when you defeat the team of Dublin's ilk, but I'm not so sure that it's a big a shock or as big a surprise as many people are making it out to be. The very fact that Dublin have been struggling this year in itself, they lost to Derry in the league final, they couldn't beat Mayo, they struggled against Louth in the Leinster final. The warning signs were there. It shouldn't come to us as a massive shock that Galway got the better of them, and especially when you consider how potent some of the Galway forwards are and the physicality that they possess further out the pitch. So I think that you should put it into context in that regard, first of all. But on top of that, we're hearing reports that there was a bug in the Dublin camp during the week as well. So, you know, maybe the things just didn't run their way. And that would explain their second half collapse, whereby they were defeated 10 points to 5. But look, that's all about Dublin from a Galway perspective. They hung in there. There was times in the first half you thought they were going to be overrun. They didn't. They kept coming back. They just kept in the game. And then in the second half, they showed terrific spirit and to claw their way back into the game. And again, as I said, they have the classy forwards who can kick the ball over the bar.
They most certainly did. Ciarán, do you feel the need for a massive post-mortem, or is this just the natural cycle of a team?
I think, Ruby, it's kind of natural cycle. You know, the team has evolved over the last few years. And, you know, it's been probably a period of massive success from Dublin since 2011. And, you know, even reflecting on the weekend, like, it was small margins. You know, a couple of things went against them. Possibly in the second half, it gave Galway a bit of momentum. You know, I certainly thought in the first half, you know, we were in RT Studios looking at our analysis at halftime, and we were looking at, you know, Dublin's setup and how they brought Howard out around the middle and James McCarthy into the middle, and they were doing well on the long kickouts and they were controlling the game, and you had that sense that if they got a goal, you know, Galway were in trouble. And possibly that dangerous lead at halftime where four or five points were kind of possibly puts one team into its comfort zone and the other team has to come out and have a real cut. And Galway turned it into a game of chaos nearly, you know, in terms of they changed their structure. They have to come out and go for it. And Dublin just possibly struggled to find that extra few percent that they found in the past. And I think you got to, you know, Desi obviously front-loaded in terms of the players on the field. You know, he obviously felt Jack McCaffrey was going well enough. James McCarthy, Mannion, he brought them all in from the start. And maybe that was a bit of a risk in that they didn't leave themselves much on the bench when they were asked for that last 10, 15 minutes. But, you know, I think we have to be, we also have to be reflective and think. I think Dublin had 10 lads, 31 plus on the start the other night. And just when the real questions are asked in the heat of championship, when you get to the final stages, was that extra few percent there that was there in previous years? It possibly wasn't, it's kind of back to the drawing board, because we don't know what the future holds for Desi Fowle. There's definitely going to be a few retirements on the horizon. It just depends on how many, and you know, Dublin will probably have to go through a bit of a rebuilding process over the next few years. I think it's the end of a real strong generation. But listen, it opens up the All Ireland, and it definitely makes the next few weeks exciting for the teams. I'd say a lot of people went to bed on Saturday night thinking, yeah, we all have a real good chance here of getting our hands on a Celtic Cross.
Well, Armagh fans and players and management, I'm sure, went to bed on Saturday evening thinking that as well. A little bit earlier on Saturday, Dublin Galway, of course, of Saturday evening. Peter, Armagh 2-12, Roscommon 12 points. Two goals, the difference as well. Armagh, good value for the win.
They were good value. Roscommon against Tyrone the week before, they couldn't miss. They were kicking the ball over from every position you could think of, and it simply wasn't happening for them in front of the goals. Guilty of kicking a lot of short, guilty of kicking a lot of wide, but bear in mind they were under pressure, and conditions for the first game in particular were tricky enough with the wind and the rain. But from an Armagh perspective, I didn't feel, even though it was close enough at half time, it was what, 1-3 to 4 points in favour of Armagh. There's only two in it, but I didn't feel they were in danger at any stage. They kicked on in the second half. Conor Turbutt, when he gets a sniff of goal at all, he goes for the jugular and is playing the football of his life up front along with young Oisin Connolly. So for a change, normally when you have Armagh in an All-Ireland quarter-final, there's excitement and there's a big finale. That didn't happen. They have matured. And they will look forward to a clash with Kerry now in the semi-final. And going on yesterday's game with Derry, Armagh will believe that they've got a great chance.
Ciarán, did Roscommon's nervousness, is that what you would describe it, surprise you?
I don't know, Ruby. I think maybe Roscommon have overachieved like a small bit to get to that level. They had lost three games up to that point, you know. And I know Peter won't like me saying this, but Tyrone were really bad against Roscommon and gave them off amounts of time on the ball, even their forwards, they were able to kick those scores quite easily. And I always sensed that Armagh were going to be a different proposition in how they set up defensively, and they're always going to try pin down their key forwards and put them under pressure. And they've done that, and that probably gave Armagh the basis for to kick on. But I'd also be a little bit critical of Armagh. I think when they got the extra man, you really were hoping they'd push on and really do a job in Roscommon and finish them off. But, you know, Roscommon came to start the second half and actually got a little bit of momentum, and they were hanging in there. They were still in the game up until that second goal, and Turbot rattled the net, a great finish. That's the second time he'd intercept the short kick out. And from there on in, they were kind of in cruise control, because we've seen right throughout the year when Roscommon have to push out, you know, they're vulnerable at the back. And Armagh just had that depth, the likes of Campbell and Connolly, that were there to pick them off in the last 10-15 minutes. But, you know, it's that big dilemma with Armagh, that we know they've quality, we know they can mix it up, we know they can play different ways, but fundamentally they will be very strong defensively, and I can expect they'll do maybe the very same against Kerry the next day.
Peter, you mentioned Armagh will fancy themselves to have a cut off Kerry. Now, the GAA have confirmed that will take place on Saturday the 13th of July at 5:30, and then Sunday will be Galway, Donegal, Sunday the 14th, that is, with a 4 o'clock throw-in for that one. Looking at Kerry and looking at that quarter-final, as a neutral looking on, as a Gaelic football fan, are there any positives you can take from that match, Peter?
Hi. Not really. Look, if and even the weekend in general, I thought was a bit disappointing with so many of the games. You know, a lot of the teams are dropping their 15 players back, 14, 15 players back into their own half, resulting in a lot of sideways passing and trying to tempt teams to kick the ball in so that teams could counter and try and hurt the opposition by playing counter-attacking football. And that's why, and if we needed proof, why we needed to tinker with the rules and to change the rules of our game. I think the Kerry Derry game gave us the perfect opportunity to highlight why, whereby you had brilliant players, brilliant attacking players on both sets of teams, but when there's 15 players count in alongside them in their own half, it makes it very difficult for them to shine, very difficult to exploit one-on-one contests. And, you know, there was various stages in that quarter final yesterday where you felt, I could nip out here for a few minutes and come back in knowing that things weren't going to have changed drastically. And as I said, there was a lot of sideways passing. And from an Armagh perspective, when you're faced with Kerry, you know, they're unlikely to want to take Kerry on in a shootout. They will see the way that Derry set up defensively, and they will believe if they're to win, that's their best chance is to do the same, to negate the Cliffords and Sean O'Shea in a similar manner, get a lot of bodies back and try and hit them on the counter. So I would be expecting more of the same, I'm afraid, in the semi-final.
Right, we have two good footballing brains here, and maybe your views are known to everybody but they're not known to me, so Ciarán, I'm going to give you a chance. Peter, what would you do when you say tinker with the rules?
Well, the very fact that there's a few proposals out there would I believe, certainly help the game become a much more attractive proposition for supporters. Four points for a goal, a kick and arc outside the D, whereby if you score outside it, it's worth 2 points. So right away, there's not the same temptation to sit back in. And there's another rule, and it's going to be difficult to implement, possibly, but it's been talked about and it has been trialled, whereby you have to keep three players in your own half, which prevents, you know, what we witnessed yesterday, everybody flooding back and then trying to play that counter-attacking style. So that would mean that there should be more kicking off the football. There should be more end-to-end style football played. So those are two proposals that I would like to see introduced, and it could well help make our games that bit more attractive.
Ciarán, agree, disagree, concur?
Oh yeah, I'd agree, Ruby. I think, like, in all fairness, the committee that's looking at it, we've got the best brains looking at it, and so far, you know, a lot of the proposals, they're all in favour of the team in possession and quickening the game up and increasing the value of the spectacle as well. We definitely need changes. You know, like, again, simple little ones. You know, if the pass back to the keeper wasn't allowed yesterday in the Kerry Derry game, Aaron Lynch wouldn't have been there as an outlet for Derry, and Kerry might have been able to press them a little bit more and put more energy into it, because you just felt yesterday they were kind of just hitting off because they had that overlap. And other little ones, like they're talking about tap and go, you know, you win a free, if there's nothing on, you can tap, you can go yourself, keep the speed into the game. And then also the mark, that they're the proposal that it has to come from outside the 50, inside the 21, but you'll be guaranteed the mark. So you've banked the mark if you win it. So if I win the mark, they'll go for goal, knowing that if they don't get the goal, they can go back to the mark. So little things like that will increase the entertainment spectacle. And as Peter said, that they are looking at some other core ones as well. We can't implement too much. We can't change the game too much. And they have to road test them, and they have to look at the unintended consequences of each rule. They have to try break them. So I'd be hopeful, though, that we'll get two or three changes over the next 12 months that will definitely enhance the game's spectacle. I think we need that.
Well, Damien Lawler does have an article on the RT Sport website. Real trials may be extended as far as October as well. And looking at the crowds that flocked to Croke Park, or didn't flock to Croke Park, was the lowest aggregate crowd for a quarterfinal since the quarterfinals were brought in 2001. Doubleheaders failing to exceed 50,000 on each occasion. I think it was 97,000 overall. I know there was a lot of things going on in Dublin over the weekend, but still, that might be a wake-up call for the GAA. Before, gents, I do let you go. Peter, final word to yourself. We failed to mention Donegal Loud. You mentioned Galway, obviously, are going to get great confidence over the win over Dublin as well. What did we learn from Donegal? Anything new or more of the same?
I was just going to say that, DC, and Donegal are still in the championship.
Save the best to last for our Donegal listeners.
Absolutely, and I definitely wouldn't be writing them off. I think they have a brilliant chance against Galway, because Galway still, and even though there's 2 weeks to the semi-final, they will be really concerned that Sean Kelly and Shane Walsh, you know, may not be match fit, may not be fit for that game. But in terms of setting up his team to prepare for the opposition, nobody does it better than Jimmy McGuinness. He has proven that. The fitness levels of their squad, he now has a stronger bench. And the best of it was, they can play a lot better than what we witnessed yesterday. There's more in them. So they're a dangerous animal moving forward for Galway, and I give them a great chance of making it to an All-Ireland final.
Peter Canavan thinks Donegal gets the All-Ireland final. Kieran Whelan, who will they play?
Oh, that's a good one. I still think I'd be leaning towards Kerry, Ruby. You know, I know Armagh will come up, they will make it difficult. We know exactly how they'll set up. Armagh probably have a little bit more quality, I think, in their forwards, and a little bit more threat up there. And if Armagh and Click, they can be dangerous. Like, while they're taking a lot of criticism, they don't lose many games. You know, a lot of games have gone to penalties, and they hang in there, and they generally sometimes play better as an underdog. So I'd be positive that we're in for two great semi-finals, but I just think that Kerry still, yesterday's game will bring them on. They'll go down the road with plenty to work on, thinking there's aspects of the game they can improve on. They won't be getting too carried away, and they can be a dangerous animal when they're in that position.
Okay, good stuff. Lots to look forward to. Kieran Whelan, Peter Canavan, thank you both very much for joining us. We're taking a short break, then we're going to get Ruby's thoughts on the Derby weekend, and we will also chat football. France-Belgium still nil all in the last 10 minutes in that one.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, we are chatting football and racing all the way until 7 o'clock with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh, and Alan Colley is joining us in studio as well. Before we chat racing, just briefly, Belgium nearly went one up there. Alan.
Brilliant chance, probably the best chance of the game. Kevin De Bruyne, well-worked move, lovely pass into him. He's actually started the game in a deep midfield position, but they brought on Mangala and pushed him further up the pitch, and it was the first time we've seen him in a real dangerous position on the edge of the box. Shane got a brilliant strike off, but a really good save by Maignan, who's very good in goals.
Okay, 84 minutes on the clock and it is 0-0 at the moment. Ruby, a record extending 16th Derby win for Aidan O'Brien over the weekend.
It's a rematch of Epsom, followed by Keeper's Heart from last year, staying on. Being followed then by Matt Surley, and down the outside is Sunway. They were following and a half to go. Nothing between Los Angeles and Ryan Moore. Ambiente friendly, Rev Havlin on the outside, trying desperately hard. Inside the last 200 yards, it's Los Angeles fighting plenty for pressure from Ambiente friendly. Sunway's running on. Los Angeles goes to better in the Irish Derby for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien. They've won it back to back. Sunway, big run on the outside.
Well, goal, that sounds goal, like an Shane, goal. Exciting finish, but it is exciting in Germany. 1-0 France, Alan Colley.
Yeah, Kolo Muani, really well worked play just around the edge of the box, stringing three or four passes together, found his way out to Koundé, who was actually in advance for position from right full, played it into Kolo Muani, who's the substitute, and just got a half a yard of space, just spun on it, took a slight deflection, it looks like, Shane. We'll see the replay now in a moment, which deceives the goalkeeper, but 1-0 to France with only 7 minutes to go.
Well, and there
the
I was.
The entire French squad is hugging him,
hoping for extra time and penalties. And do you know what? When a goal is scored in this tournament, I'm like, is there any reason this can be ruled out now?
Well, that's the problem, and we'll get into the VAR chat, but I don't think so, Shane. In the build up here, we're looking at it. Just came across the box, Hernandez. This is a lovely pass by Griezmann out to Koundé, and eventually it finds its way into Kolo Muani's feet, and a lovely little spin here by him. Just gets half a yard. A hit for Vertonghen, deflection. I feel for Vertonghen because he's had a great game all night, and that deceives the goalkeeper. So fortunate enough goal from France, but they won't care with five minutes to go, Shane.
No, 1-0 France. Ruby, I was about to tee you up there. We heard the ending of what sounded like a very exciting end to the Irish Derby at the weekend. Record extending 16th win for Aidan O'Brien, as I mentioned. Well deserved. And was it as exciting as it sounded?
It was a great race to watch. Euphoric Grosvenor Square, the other three Ballydoyle runners made sure it was a really strong gallop. Los Angeles sat just behind them with the favourite Ambiente friendly. The three pacemakers, or the three Ballydoyle horses, all ran off the bend and left a big gap down the inside for Los Angeles, which Ambiente friendly went into as well. So too did Keeper's Heart. Now Matt Surrey of Roger Variance didn't get a great run under James Doyle, but Los Angeles ground him out. Maybe Ambiente friendly got involved soon enough, but Rob Hadlin had to keep James Doyle in the pocket. And look, they're the decisions you make. He kept James Doyle in, he got upsides, Ryan Moore, and challenged him, but Los Angeles outstayed Ambiente friendly, and it was a real staying performance from Los Angeles, who looks like a horse that'll go further in future, maybe a St. Ledger type horse. But Ambiente friendly can go back and trip, and Sunway and Matt Surrey will win plenty of races too. It was a good race.
Good, that is what I'd like to hear. What else caught your eye yesterday before we chat
Saturday? Yesterday it was a good weekend all around. I think Mick Halford and Tracy Collins had a horse in the first race yesterday called Charanay. He won a 6 furlong or a mile handicap, but he looked like a horse with a huge future. Charanay, Henry Matisse was a good winner of the Railway Stakes as well for Aidan O'Brien and Wayne Lorden. He was the outsider of the O'Brien runners, but he's a horse with a huge pedigree and a horse with a massive future. Geraldine's and Colin Keane had a good weekend. Apricot Ice was a good winner for them on Saturday. Jan Brugel won the International Stakes for Ballydoyle. He was good as well. And Ross O'Ryan from Galway, riding for Rafe Beckett, won the Cairn Community Games Pretty Polly Stakes aboard Blue Stocking. Ran down Emily Upjohn, and Ross is from Galway, making a huge impression in the UK. So he is a very good rider, very well measured individual. Lost a big job last year with Amo Racing, but he's only a young man, and how he dealt with losing the job, his replies in the press, the manner in which he took it, like it was of somebody way beyond his years.
Okay.
There was no ties out of the pram. There was no statement that could leave him in any way. You know, he just took it really, really well. He played his cards, man could be a politician. He was that good.
Yeah. That's a good show of character. A good show of character.
Yeah, I thought it was a good show of character, good show of pedigree, I'd say.
Conversation. I was actually watching some of the TV coverage, and yourself and Jane, a friend of the show, of course, as well. The Derby weekend as a whole, does it still have the razzmatazz as it once had?
Friday definitely had. Friday night, great local crowd. Saturday, I'm afraid, Shane, the weather was... weather was poor, and who's going to go? It was lashing rain, it was freezing cold, and
caveat that though with everything, and we've discussed this really, kind of everything that's been happening in Dublin, it was such a busy weekend as well, that perhaps some punters
of course it is, and if you're, especially with racing, if you get up in the morning, you look outside the window, there's very few pre-sold tickets with horse racing. So you're making a decision. Do you go, don't you go? And when the weather's against you, you're not going to go. Sunday, yeah, there seemed to be a good crowd yesterday. Nine races, not for me. I think it's too long a day. You're there, people there for nearly 5 hours with 15, 17 minutes racing. It's not entertaining enough for me to have nine races, but look, that's only my opinion on it. I thought there was a really good crowd and a good atmosphere yesterday, and there was a great atmosphere in the stand when the derby was on, but look, it has a long way to go to get back to where it once was, but yesterday I felt a step in the right direction. I just hope the nine races didn't turn anybody off.
How prestigious is the Irish Derby?
It's taken a bit of flack. It's obviously dropped in rankings, but and that's a much bigger conversation, Shane. I don't. People are calling for the Derby to have the distance changed to make it a 10-furlong race. But to me, that's just a quick fix that ultimately is not going to fix it. It's a much more commercial thing, and I think we have to somehow turn owners, trainers, bloodstock agents, we've got to turn the trend, turn people back into believing that the middle distance horse is the cream. He takes a bit longer to come to hand, but ultimately horses have to be let mature. It's like overfacing young footballers. If you push horses too soon, they don't maximise their potential as well, and I think it's a bigger industry talk, Shane.
Okay.
The industry needs to help the sport.
Okay. Patience is from a casual fan like myself.
That's probably a good way of putting it. Okay. Patience is required, and I think people have sort of running short of patience, and I'm afraid with horses you have to have patience.
Okay. On that note, we will Alan Colley, you need a bit of patience here. You're gesticulating at the television. What's been happening?
This ref has been annoying me all day, to be honest with you, Shane, but the ball hit him there and then the game stops and all the momentum
that's
is
the rules
out.
Alan,
I know,
that's the
there's a lot of rules in football now that I don't like, and I'm sure we'll get into them in a minute. They're ruining the game.
You weren't one bit pleased with Germany Denmark and the decisions on that, I take it. So
yeah, they were the big ones over the weekend, and these are game defining decisions, Shane. Like you think of now, I've always claimed, and every discussion we've had around VAR and the offside, I'm fine with that because it's definitive, even though it was only a toenail and it's not in the spirit of the game, and when you see the graphic showing up, it's really, really harsh. But I can't stand here and be a hypocrite now when all along I've said it's been, once it's definitive, that's fine. It's the subjective ones that always irritate me, and this new one with the handball and the handball law, rule, whatever you want to call it, that's been implemented over the past 18 months, 2 years, is absolute nonsense. And now they've added in a snicko where the ball alerts the referee if it hits a hand, is just absolutely, like, we're going so far away from where the game is supposed to be, and this is not how it's supposed to be, Shane. And I felt so sorry for Denmark and Joachim Andersen in particular, because the discussion then breaks out, was his hand in a natural position, was it an unnatural? It was totally natural. It wasn't like he was sticking his arm out to block a ball and give a penalty, like what we used to deem as
you can't defend with your arms tied behind your back.
But you can't do anything with your hands behind your back. Any sort of movement you make on a football pitch, your arms are going to be flailing in one way or another, no matter what you're doing, not just defending. So common sense has to prevail. And once Michael Oliver was called to the screen, I knew he was going to give it. And as I said, these are game-defining decisions, and it's ruining it. It's absolutely ruining it. Because I don't know any player, any fan, any manager that likes what we've seen on Saturday night with the VAR.
Tell you what I find frustrating, Alan, watching football. So Belgium are 20 seconds from going out here, and they're moving faster than they have in the last 5 games.
Yeah.
Why did it have to be 3 minutes from going out before they start running?
Yeah, it's a good question, Ruby, and I suppose it stems from the approach, and I mentioned it in our earlier chat about that they've been so negative sitting in the low block, but all of a sudden you go goal down and the urgency comes into your game and you're chasing it. Psychological, I don't know, but I would always be of the view that you go out with the mindset to try and win from the start. It's too late now, as you said, we're into injury time, and I think it's going to be blown up and they're gone. But they haven't played well over the course of the tournament anyway. I think they've been very disappointing, and they probably got what they deserved. France dominated the game without really creating any clear cut chances, but they had loads of the ball, plenty of attempts on target, so they probably deserve to go through, Ruby.
You listen to the GAA chat as well, and the lads talking about how you make it more entertaining. Yet when you watched Georgia yesterday against Spain, like, they literally were defending, but it was entertaining.
Yeah, because the difference with Georgia, Ruby, and I covered Georgia in a couple of the games and I loved them. They were brilliant. They were a great watch. As you said, they were so entertaining, even despite the fact that there was a lot of the game they were camped on the edge of their box. But they played with, even we go back to the chat about the hurling earlier, all the passion, all the heart, all the desire.
They played like a James Woodlock managed team.
James Woodlock could manage Georgia, no problem. He'd be better than Willie Sanyal. But you know what to have, Ruby, and this is, it probably broadens out the conversation then as to where we are in terms of international football in Ireland. And if we were to play against one of the top teams now, and we'd be sitting on the edge of the box camped. But you know, Georgia are very good, and the same with Slovakia yesterday. Even though they're under pressure for large periods of the game, when they do win it back in possession, they're very, very good to take the sting out of the game a little bit and put 10, 12, 14 passes together, particularly the three in midfield for Slovakia yesterday, Lobotka, Kučka and Duda. Those three were excellent, and that's something that we're not as good as them technically, that it's just basically kicked up the pitch and it's coming straight back on top of us, and it's wave after wave. So that's something we need to improve on massively. But I think that's why the likes of Georgia and Slovakia and those teams have acquitted themselves so well, because despite the periods of defending, and to be fair to Georgia, they've a world-class player, which every team, Ruby, if you're a low-ranked team, we've seen him with Wales having Gareth Bale, they have the lad Kvaratskhelia, who's a world-class player, carries them up the pitch, an old-fashioned ball carrier that when he wins it on the edge of the box, he's travelling 50, 60 yards, gets them up the pitch. So they have a couple of things in their favour, but they were a great watch and they were a great story throughout.
Well, one team that haven't been a great watch...
They have.
But that's in a completely different way. I love watching them. It's
they've been a great watch, trust me.
Saved by the Bell. This can't go on. They can't keep getting these results, can they?
No, it can't go on. It can't. But funny enough, like, and even we were chatting again earlier about like stats and different things in games. I covered the Slovakia game. The disrespect that was shown to Slovakia, they beat Belgium earlier in the competition as well and performed really well, Shane, and everybody at England down as this was a banker. Now, they should be beating Slovakia, absolutely, but the disrespect I felt shown towards Slovakia before the game was wrong, because they're a good team and they were there on merit, and they showed that in the first half an hour of the game. They were the better team, and the difference with them as well compares to England, you're watching it yesterday, and this is my gripe with England: better balance, better shape, better organisation. England are so dysfunctional in every department, all over the pitch.
But how has that happened? Because, it seems to me that's only happened overnight. Because they haven't been disorganised lately.
No, and we were even chatting off air, Shane, and you're right, Southgate was always very rigid in how he sets up, very conservative, very defence-minded, and we all knew what he was. And he was good at it, because the last two or three tournaments, they've obviously done very well. But the wheels have fallen off somewhere in this tournament, because the biggest problem for them at the moment, I find, when they're building up the attacks, and you watch the likes of the nowadays when teams are coming out, particularly the good teams, and they're building up with their centre halves, as soon as the ball goes out to Kieran Trippier, his body shape is only facing one way, and it's always back in the pitch on his right foot. And it's like, Ruby, I suppose the best way to describe it to you, it's like a horse on a track who's only pulling one way and he can only go one way. Trippier, so that means England are closing off the whole left hand side of the pitch, whereas if that was a left footed player, he'd be opening up his body and he'd have options down the line into the centre forward or into the midfield. It goes to Trippier and it always comes back inside, so that's a problem straight away with just the build up and the attack. I thought Maynou came in yesterday and done really, really well. Then you get into the advanced areas, and because they're closing off the left hand side of the pitch, they've no width on the left. Phil Foden is coming into the space then where Bellingham is, overcrowded. You have Saka on the other side, who I think has done okay in the tournament, but he's been getting a bit of criticism, ended up back left full yesterday. Like, it's unbelievable what's happened. Harry Kane never moved a leg yesterday. I love Harry Kane, but he was so poor. They obviously kept him on. If I was Ollie Watkins, I'd be sitting on the bench saying, what do I have to do to get a game here? And he stretches defenders and runs in behind. That's something that they've a major problem with as well. There's nobody, the likes of what Sterling used to do, Rashford, with their pace, running, a tread in behind. That's why I think Anthony Gordon should come in on the left. He will do that. And all of a sudden, if you're stretching teams, then things might open up in the middle for you in those condensed areas. And then you might get Bellingham and Foden on the ball doing what we see them doing with Man City or Real Madrid.
Well, Jude Bellingham, UEFA are investigating his gesture he made after the goal.
Bellingham's something else, so. In fairness, you have to say, Shane. I was watching the match thinking he's struggling, get him off. And I mentioned that even the Champions League finals, it's such a long season. I think he's only 21 years of age. Mentally, physically, he's obviously flagging towards the end of the season. You could see that yesterday. But does that lad have something special about him? And even the... I couldn't believe this, but apparently I didn't see it myself. Apparently when he scored, he's running out to the crowd shouting, "Who else? Who else?"
A bit of confidence.
You want to be good to be doing that.
Sorry, Ruby, I over interjected there.
No, you're good. Well, why doesn't Gareth Southgate have a left full with a left foot?
Because he's only brought one who hasn't played in 6 months.
Injured, yeah.
It's honestly, Ruby, the decisions are unbelievable. And even watching the match yesterday as well, Gareth, if you're chasing a game like they were, how he didn't make changes until the 70th minute. He brings on Ivan Toney on 94 minutes. Like, some of the stuff, as he said, this was the man who I always felt was a safe pair of hands, very good with the media savvy, good in his interviews, very diplomatic, ticks all the boxes. But the wheels have fallen off somewhere massively throughout this tournament, with him especially, because he is struggling.
Well, I look forward to it.
We'll do the game tonight then.
Excellent. Look forward to that.
Portugal, yeah, I think they'll come true. Again, if you want entertainment, watch Cristiano. He's a show himself. So I think Portugal will get the better of Slovenia, and then they'll face France, and that'll be an absolute cracker. And you've Germany, Spain as well on that half of the draw. So incredible. England got fortunate, but I don't think they'll beat Switzerland, Ruby. I watched Switzerland against Italy. Now, Italy were a disgrace. One of the worst performances.
How bad? Like, speaking shocking. Of wheels coming off.
Absolutely shocking. Yeah, they were really poor. For such a brilliant nation as well, they were really poor. But Switzerland are very good, and they'll beat England.
What are you calling it now? So it'll be Spain, Germany, Portugal, France on the loaded side.
It's incredible
of,
that half,
of the draw.
Turkey, Austria. Turkey will beat Austria.
No, Austria will be Turkey.
Austria the closest.
And Austria
to
are
side.
The danger of, as a dark horse
to go all the way.
Yeah.
And then
very good Austria.
Romania, Netherlands, I'm assuming. Now, we will be previewing these matches in detail
tomorrow.
But the Dutch to beat Romania for you, Alan?
I don't know.
Dutch was shocking the last.
Yeah. I wouldn't. That wouldn't surprise me. Those games on that half of the draw are all 50-50.
England are going to be blessed, though.
So. Well, they're not, because they're so poor, Shane. They can't win it. They can't win it with the way they're playing, and they can't win it with the manager and the decisions that he's making at the moment.
Joe, every time you say it, Joe, that soundbite of Mick McCarthy, just it can't.
No.
It's like, can it get any, worse?
It's getting to Kevin Keegan standards.
It can't.
No, right. Graham Taylor's was the best. Do I not like that? Do I not like that to the linesman all night? That's the best documentary you'll ever watch.
On that note, that is all we have time for. Alan Colley, pleasure.
I enjoyed that. Brilliant.
Pleasure as always. Big thanks to Lorelei Davis and Andrew for working on this evening's show. I've lost the run of myself, Ruby. Bennett is up next, I believe.
Cheers, Shane.
Cheers.
See
from all of the Game On team. We're taking a short break. We're going to check in with the news next. But do stay tuned to 2FM, because Bennett is up next with a new music show.
RTE 2FM.